This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Energy. I'm Owen Garner. Coming up on today's news programme, a former Russian spy and his daughter are in critical condition after being found unconscious in Wiltshire on Sunday. UK police are trying to find out what unknown substance harmed the pair. Boris Johnson has suggested there could be implications for the upcoming World Cup in Russia if Moscow is found to have poisoned a former spy here.
I think it will be very difficult to see, thinking ahead to the World Cup this July, this summer, I think it will be very difficult to imagine that UK representation at that event could go ahead in the normal way, and we would certainly have to consider that.
DUP leader Arlene Foster met with chief negotiator of the EU in Brussels to discuss the Irish border plan post-Brexit.
He has put forward an EU draft text, which not only we find unacceptable, the British government finds it unacceptable, the Labour Party finds it unacceptable, so there will be a need to negotiate from that.
We will also be covering how the latest severe weather events, the Beast from the East and Storm Emma, have highlighted the need for greater community cooperation. With the latest updates on other news, here is Gregor Kerr.
An emergency worker remains in hospital after dealing with the suspected poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in Salisbury. Police say three others were admitted to hospital but have since been released. Toxicology tests are taking place to see what caused Sergei and Yulai Skripal to collapse on a bench on Sunday. The area is still sealed off. This man's flower stall was nearby.
The police just said that it could be going on all week. Other people have said that it could be just till 12 o'clock tonight until they find out exactly what the substance was that was used.
A woman has been found stabbed to death in London while her husband and sons were found dead in Sussex. Police say they found a woman believed to be in her 40s with multiple stab injuries at her family home in Twickenham, southwest of London. Officers were called to the scene at 5:54 on Monday after concerns were raised about the family's welfare. After finding her dead, they quickly tried to find out where her husband and two young children were. Less than an hour earlier, Sussex police had discovered the bodies of a man and two young boys 85 miles away on the seafront in Eastbourne, East Sussex. South Korea say Kim Jong-un is willing to abandon nuclear weapons if the security of his regime is guaranteed after he reportedly said it was the last wish of his father. An envoy from Seoul made the announcement after meeting with a North Korean leader, who is also said to be open to talks with the US. South Korea previously insisted such a move was not on the table. Thousands of homes in parts of the UK are left without water for the third day running after a sudden rise in temperature has caused pipes to burst. Water companies have been working around the clock to restore homes and businesses in parts of England. South East Water says that roughly 12,000 of their customers still remain with no supply. London Mayor Sadiq Khan also criticised the companies after thousands were left without water in London and schools were forced to close on Monday. However, all water has been restored in Edinburgh. An ex-police officer has escaped injury after a bomb partially exploded under her car in Northern Ireland. The victim was driving along the main Belfast to Bangor Road when it went off this morning. Army bomb disposal experts were called to the scene. While the threat level from dissident Republicans has lowered elsewhere in the UK, it still remains severe in Northern Ireland. DUP leader Arlene Foster says the incident is very disturbing.
We do condemn utterly those who would seek to bring violence back to Northern Ireland. They failed in the past, and of course they will fail again in the future.
A hospital audit has found that children are suffering worse injuries at public trampoline parks than compared to private gardens. In 2017, it was found that ambulances were called to over 1,000 incidents at trampoline parks across England. Sheffield Children's Hospital said its own audit found that children hurt at parks required more treatment than those injured at home on the home equipment. An industry body said it would not be averse to regulation of the sector. There are no safety regulations specifically aimed at the trampoline parks, but a voluntary standard was published in 2017. Schools across Midlothian had to delay opening this morning due to dangerous weather in the area. Several schools were forced to open at 11 a.m. as heavy snow fell overnight and this morning, causing severe traffic problems. There were reports of buses and lorries stuck in Pennycook, and many roads are at a standstill earlier this morning. Snow is also causing similar problems in West Lothian, with Livingston, Bathgate and Whitburn all being affected. Motorists on the Edinburgh City bypass also faced delays this morning due to the snow. Public Health England have warned Xanax users that they are dicing with death. The counterfeit pills are a painkiller intended to help those with anxiety, but it has become a common party drug amongst young people. The drug is widely prescribed around the US to treat anxiety, but amongst teenagers and young adults in the UK, it is being used illegally on a large scale. The drug has been especially popular among music artists. American rapper Little Peep was found dead in November after overdosing on Xanax. The drug is often mixed with fentanyl, which has killed 113 people in the last 12 months, according to the National Crime Agency. Despite the warning, experts claim that the amount of people using counterfeit Xanax is only growing. And finally, more than 80% of us say we wouldn't recognise our own neighbours if we were asked to pick them from a police lineup. That rises to 90% for people in London. Celebrity chef Ainsley Harriott is involved in the initiative and says last year's 9.3 million people got behind it.
They just all came together. Didn't matter whether it was just having a little cup of tea and a biscuit over the fence or getting massive trestle tables out in your local street. Bringing people together, bringing communities together, that's what it was all about.
The organisers of the annual lottery-funded Big Lunch are trying to change that. They all want us to be a little bit friendly to each other. Back to you, Owen.
Thanks, Gregor. Former spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter, Yulia, are critically ill in hospital after being found unconscious in Salisbury. The pair were found on a park bench in Wiltshire, and the police are trying to determine the unknown substance that harmed them. Ian Leggett reports.
After the incident involving Sergei Skripal and his daughter, Yulia, questions have been raised into whether this was a deliberate and orchestrated assassination by the Russian state. Echoing the 2006 poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko, many have been quick to point the finger of blame towards Vladimir Putin's government and their history of silencing voices against the state. Former advisor to Vladimir Putin, Sergei Markov, insisted that Mr. Skripal's incident had nothing to do with the Kremlin.
Russia is a normal country. Russian leaders don't kill its political opponents. And any accusation of Russian political leaders to kill its political opponent, it's clear propagandistic campaign and demonization of Vladimir Putin.
Shashank Joshi, a senior research fellow at the Royal United Service Institute, believes that the circumstances in which Mr. Skripal was under and the previous history of Russian state intervention places Putin's government firmly under suspicion.
It's significant partly because the individual in question is a former senior Russian intelligence officer and therefore was living in the UK under conditions that were probably unusual by standards of anyone else. He had betrayed his country in the eyes of Moscow. He had been imprisoned, convicted for 13 years in jail, sent to a penal colony. And so immediately he is a vulnerable person. And so anything that happens to those like him who are effectively living in the UK or in the West on political asylum, I think is inherently of interest.
Mr. Joshi also believes questions should be asked because of Russia's previous cases of possible involvement in the deaths of former spies.
One possibility is, of course, a general message to all those who have double-crossed the Russian state, a way of threatening others who may be looking into the Kremlin's interests and its concerns. But equally possible is that Mr. Skripal was engaged directly in some work that clashed with Russian interest. Perhaps he maintained communications with his old colleagues and had tried to recruit them. Perhaps he was working perhaps with a private firm that was looking into some of these affairs. It's impossible to say. All we can do is look at history. And if you look back at the official inquiry into Alexander Litvinenko's murder that was released 2 years ago, you'll see that it does outline some of the factors that perhaps made Litvinenko a target, and they included not just the fact that he was a traitor in Russian eyes, but also that he was seen to be still working with MI6, British intelligence, and perhaps still working with known critics of the Putin regime.
UK's Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson made a statement in the House of Commons today stating, "No attempt to take life in the UK will go unpunished," but also that he is not yet pointing fingers at the Kremlin. Adding that there were echoes of the death of Litvinenko in 2006, he expressed concerns about the future UK-Russian relations, even alluding to this year's Football World Cup held in Russia.
I think it will be very difficult to see, thinking ahead to the World Cup this July, this summer, I think it will be very difficult to imagine that UK representation at that event could go ahead in the normal way, and we would certainly have to consider that.
Mr. Skripal and his daughter Yulia remain in a critical condition in hospital, with the UK's counter-terrorism force joining the investigation with Wiltshire County Police.
A new health drive has been launched in England to tackle the obesity crisis impacting the UK. Top health officials agreed that change needs to happen as fears are rising that obesity is becoming the norm. Our health correspondent Suzanne Oliphant has more.
The main objective in this new health drive is to reduce the portion sizes Brits are consuming on a daily basis, as one of the leading causes of obesity is the lack of awareness of the number of calories we are consuming. A drop is being considered in the recommended daily calorie intake down to 1,600. The proposal calls to cut portion sizes of over 13 different food groups, including pizza and ready meals. This is part of the initiative to cut calorie intake by 20% by 2024. Public Health England is encouraging the food industry to use healthier ingredients, but nutritional therapist Natasha Alonzi argues that education needs to be implemented for real change to occur.
I think they need to do more to achieve because I think it's education that's really important, starting young and also to all members of society. I think you need to try and educate people about buying foods and cooking for themselves, and more about nutrients in food as opposed to always focusing on the calories. Because I think that will have more impact on people's health. It's education that's getting people to... And it's also this misconception that eating fruit and vegetables and healthy foods are more expensive than processed foods.
Natasha goes on to explain the most common health implications which accompany obesity.
It would be an increased risk of diabetes, increased risk of cardiovascular disease, joint problems, NHS, big pressure in the NHS with these diseases. Just the overall general health is just not going to be that great if you eat too much food and for your the energy that you put out and you take too much in.
The obesity crisis is particularly worrying for children. In England, 20% of 10 to 11-year-olds are obese, compared to Scotland, where only 14% of people being at risk.
Do you have your ID? Jessica, that's a high caffeine drink, so I'll need to see some ID from you. Thank you.
In the UK, a voluntary ban has been introduced by supermarkets and Boots across the country, preventing under 16-year-olds from buying drinks with high caffeine content. We have spoken to school pupils in Edinburgh about the ban during their lunch break this afternoon.
But I don't think that's fair either. Well, I don't know, I think there should be a limit that they can buy in one go, probably, because then they'll just, like, buy loads. But
we have investigated the issue within Scotland and have been given a statement by the Public Health Minister, Aileen Campbell, which we voiced up.
Improving the food environment is the single biggest change we want to see in terms of public health. Our draft strategy includes measures designed to help people make healthier choices and empower personal change, along with proposals to restricting promotion and marketing of foods high in fat, salt, and sugar. We continue to call on the UK government to take the vital step of banning all junk food TV advertising before the 9 p.m. watershed.
If the food industry continues to offer oversized, unhealthy options, Public Health England has said they will be prepared to ask the government to enforce legislation to control the crisis.
There will be no criminal proceedings over two baby ashes cases in Fife and Glasgow. Fiscals concluded there should be no further action over the cases of infant cremation in Kirkcaldy and Dundee crematoriums raised in Dame Angoli's report into cremations in Scotland. Dame Angoli had been looking into the baby ashes scandal at Motorhall Crematorium when she flagged them up. The Crown Office said both families have been informed. The City Council announced an independent review, which was conducted by Dame Angoli, after it emerged that bereaved parents had been denied access to the ashes, which were buried in the Garden of Remembrance at Motorhall Crematorium in Edinburgh. It is thought the practice was carried out from the 1960s until 2011. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has said she would not back the UK's EU withdrawal bill in its current format. Mrs. Sturgeon has said that the imposition of a UK-wide framework for these responsibilities by Theresa May's government would represent a blatant power grab, as well as saying that any First Minister worth their salt would not back the bill. Both the Scottish and Welsh governments have said they cannot recommend that legislative consent be given to the bill. Andrew MacDonald has more.
As we leave the European Union, we will forge a bold new positive role for ourselves in the world, and we will make Britain a country that works not for a privileged few, but for every one of us.
This has been the party line from Theresa May's government throughout Brexit negotiations. But what does this policy mean for Scotland? Nicola Sturgeon has spoken this week about the EU withdrawal bill put forward by the UK government. The First Minister has criticised the plan to implement a UK-wide framework for repatriated responsibilities in devolved areas. Herald columnist David Torrance has said that the SNP's position is designed to keep pressure on the government.
Yeah, I mean, I think that continues her strategy of trying to keep pressure on the UK government in the sort of ongoing spat about what the SNP call a power grab.
Scottish Government have said this is an issue of principle, and it has been suggested that the publishing of their own continuity bill could present a constitutional crisis. However, Mr. Torrance has said this is an issue that simply doesn't bother the general public.
It will be the world's most boring crisis, in that it's so technical, it's so sort of high level, that I think if the SNP, if Nicola Sturgeon's hoping to derive sort of political capital from that, that she might be disappointed. I don't think there's any evidence that even voters in Scotland, even those who want to stay in the EU or the single market, are particularly exercised about this whole thing.
On Peston on Sunday, the First Minister has said she welcomed movement from the UK government, but reiterated that it is the issue of principle at stake. Sturgeon feels this is about consent, or as she put it, about who decides. The SNP councillor, Eleanor Bird, feels this would be a dangerous precedent to set.
This has obviously been a process and it's a bill, but it's clearly something that you know we need to stick our neck out on, because this seems to be kind of ongoing and there's not been a whole lot of resolution or solution to this point. So I think again, better late than never. Nicola Sturgeon's not trying to undermine in any way Brexit negotiations. All she's trying to do is her job, which is to strengthen Scotland's position. So I think she's completely, entirely right in her move to do that.
Nicola Sturgeon has in the end left Scotland's commentariat with one question. Is her current position a case of principle or politics?
There's an element of principle in it, a defence of the devolution settlement. But I think, as I say, the main emphasis in this is keeping up pressure on the UK government.
You are listening to Radio Energy News Programme. The time is 4:43. Former Russian spy Sergei Skripal is in critical condition after being exposed to an unknown substance. A top health official has stated the portion sizes need to be reduced in the UK to tackle obesity rates. Still to come, British cyclist Bradley Wiggins has been accused of using performance-enhancing substances, but denies the allegations. Water has been restored to thousands of people in Edinburgh following a mechanical fault in the system. All homes in the EH10 area, including Buckstone, from Firm Head, Oxgangs, Polworth and Bruntsfield, were affected. Scottish Water said it rerouted water from elsewhere in the network to fix the problem by noon. The firm said the problem was unconnected to the current period of winter weather. DUP members met with the EU representative for the Brexit negotiations, Michael Garnier, this morning. The meeting was to discuss Northern Ireland's part in negotiations. Our correspondent, Duncan Gorman, reports.
DUP leader Arlene Foster has expressed her concerns about Northern Ireland's future in the Brexit negotiations. Foster and delegates from her party met with the EU chief Brexit negotiator Michael Barnier in Brussels this morning. Sinn Féin had met with Barnier on Monday and were keen for Northern Ireland to have special status where they could remain within the customs union and single market. But Foster argued that Northern Ireland had to leave the EU on the same terms as the rest of the UK.
Not accept any form of regulatory divergence which separates Northern Ireland economically or politically from the rest of the UK, and the economic and constitutional integrity of the United Kingdom must not be compromised in any way. The Republic of Ireland government, for their part, claim to be guarantors of the Belfast Agreement, but they are clearly seeking to unilaterally change that Belfast Agreement without our input or our consent.
Both Sinn Féin and the DUP have worries about how an Irish border could affect the Good Friday Agreement. The Sinn Féin leader has said that her party was not looking for a border down the Irish Sea, with the DUP also agreeing that there must be no internal borders within the UK.
Meanwhile, Guy Verhofstadt, the European Parliament's representative in the Brexit negotiations, spoke with the British Parliament members today in London. While speaking to the media afterwards, he spoke of the importance of a unified, structured Brexit strategy.
If you have an agreement on that, on the concept, on the architecture, then it's far more easy to start negotiations and to fill it in. Better than to start a wild negotiation where you ask and request a huge number of individual arrangements in the different sectors and fields of cooperation.
Do the Oscars impact box office sales? The 90th Academy Awards ceremony took place in Los Angeles on Sunday night. The big winners of the night were The Shape of Water and Dunkirk. But how does the ceremony affect cinema viewing trends in Scotland? Our correspondent Heather Ferguson reports.
And the Oscar goes to The Shape of Water.
Cinema's most important awards, the Oscars, took place this weekend, taking last year's films into the spotlight. With the decline of cinema, questions are raised about the importance of the Oscar. Here we are at Fountain Park Cinema Complex in Fountain Bridge. Out of the films on offer today, only five were Oscar nominated or won. This includes Shape of Water, which won four awards, and Darkest Hour, which scooped up the award for Best Actor. According to Cinema UK, the highest selling Oscar winner was Coco, takings of over £8 million in the UK alone this month. However, not all February's top earners were Oscar-winning films. This month, Black Panther came out on top of the box office, despite not being nominated for an Oscar this year, earning more than £31 million in ticket sales. We spoke to Tina McFarling from the British film industry about how the Oscars impact the box office.
Over years, when films do win in a major way at the Oscars and also with some other awards platforms, the BAFTAs, of course, and at film festivals like Cannes, it does have an impact on the box office, that there's upturn for films which have been released. Certainly there was more interest for Moonlight after last year that it succeeded. And over years, there have been films where distributors have widened the release of the film directly after the BAFTAs and after the Oscars to pick up on awards buzz that translates into...
In general, the youth have turned their backs on going to the cinema. Netflix, which currently has over 118 million customers, is the youth prefer to watch films. We spoke to student Nicole Miller about the appeal of streaming.
I don't really watch the Oscars. I prefer watching Netflix. I don't think I've ever watched the Oscars, to be honest. I prefer watching it in my bed with my snacks, comfy. Sorry. That was shit, I'm sorry.
The battle between the streaming services and cinema continue. Yet it seems that the cinema is here to stay for now. And definitely the glitz and glamour of the Oscars.
We now head over to our sports correspondent, Laura McCulloch, for the latest in sports news.
Now, the latest sport highlights on Radio Energy.
Sir Bradley Wiggins and Team Sky Cycling say they strongly refute claims that they have used prescription drugs to improve their performance during the Tour de France. A report from MPs claimed that Wiggins and other former members crossed an ethical line by using loopholes in anti-doping rules. Team Sky boss Sir Dave Brailsford, who faced accusations for sending Sir Bradley a mystery package in 2011, feels the situation has been mishandled.
I've already said, I'll hold my hand up, that I agree with you, I didn't handle that very well. There was no question whatsoever of trying to any cover up. It was just simply what I was being told, and I was too hasty in relaying that information on.
Serena Williams is set to return to tennis 6 months after nearly dying from a pulmonary embolism during labour. Williams will make her comeback at the WTA Tour at Indian Wells on Thursday. She spoke at an exhibition in New York last night.
I think everyone should have high expectations, you know. You should always believe in yourself, even if no one else does. And if someone tells you no, you just keep going and don't let that stop you. So that's kind of how I feel, and that's the message that I'm spreading on this journey back.
The final set of pre-season Formula One testing began in Barcelona today. The morning session was not an enjoyable one for the McLaren team as their car was forced off of the track, only managing 7 laps in total. Their driver, Stoffel Vandoorne, only charted a time of 1 minute 24 seconds, 773 milliseconds. Order was restored, however, with the top 3 fastest morning times coming courtesy of Sebastian Vettel for Ferrari, Valtteri Bottas for Mercedes, and Max Verstappen for Red Bull. Whilst in rugby union, England captain Dylan Hartley is a doubt for this weekend's Six Nations fixture against France due to a leg muscle problem. Jack Nowell and Sam Underhill have both already been ruled out through injury. Back to you, Owen, for travel and weather updates.
Thanks, Laura. Scotland is still reeling after a week of severe weather which saw much of the country grind to a halt. After Storm Emma collided with the so-called Beast from the East, the Met Office released a red weather warning and concern mounted for the homeless populations of UK cities. In Edinburgh, churches opened their doors to homeless and vulnerable citizens, with St John's in the city centre leading the outreach. Our reporter John Gillespie reports.
For the first time, Scotland's under a risk to life warning for extreme snow.
Icy roads led to accidents and long hold-ups and crashes.
Multiple pile-ups littered the carriageway.
Do not travel unless it's absolutely essential.
The recent cold weather over the past week has, in many ways, brought the city of Edinburgh to a standstill. On Wednesday, shops in the city centre closed, buses and taxis stopped their services, and many people were sent home early from work. Although this weather is unusual for Scotland, why was the city so badly affected by the storm? And how have people who have no home to go to stayed safe over this most recent cold snap? On Thursday, the Met Office issued a red weather alert as the cold front hit and up to 50 centimetres of snow fell on higher ground. As the snow fell, the council launched a gritting initiative to try and clear all of the city's main roads, with 22 lorries gritting more than 600 kilometres of roads. Furthermore, the council sent care staff to visit vulnerable people in the city in an effort to ensure they have the food necessary to get them through the storm. In a statement regarding the severity of the storm, Councillor Leslie McInnes had to say,
"In terms of what happened last week, we were facing a very unusual extreme weather event. And the fact that we issued a red weather warning was indicative of the scale of it. So this is unusual for us. Deeply unusual. In actual fact, other countries don't deal with it better than we do. They simply deal with it more often. And as a result of that, they have been able to invest in parts of the infrastructure, in terms of equipment purchases, etc., which we would find very hard to justify.
However, for the homeless in Edinburgh, the snows have proved a far greater danger. The sub-zero temperatures and cold wind are a real risk to the health of those with no home, and with the shops and businesses closing, many homeless people quickly found they had nowhere to escape the cold. In response, the council started housing those homeless for the night. However, the St John's Church on Princes Street has run a 24-hour homeless shelter over this period, providing vital shelter to those unable to get to council-run shelters. Priest Marcus Dunschkofer said,
"And I knew that, there would be some warm shelter happening. However, as I was saying there on Meadowbank, which is just a bit off the beaten path, a little away from the city centre, and with everything shutting down, I just didn't know how people would get there."
Councillor Leslie McInnes praised Edinburgh's community spirit for these efforts.
"The assistance that has been given by a number of different community leaders, including the church at the bottom of Rolian Road, I think is an example of the kind of community spirit that we've seen in the city during this period of extreme weather."
As the snow thaws and the city returns to normality, the way the council has dealt with Storm Emma has undoubtedly left many citizens frustrated and caused massive disruption to everyday life. This is John Gillespie, Radio Energy.
There is a yellow weather warning in place until 11 p.m. tonight. Areas affected include Stirling, Dunfermline and Fife. A breakdown on the M80 has caused major standstills for commuters travelling north to places such as Stirling and Cumbernauld. That's all from Radio Energy's news programme. I'm Owen Garner. We'll be back at 6 o'clock for your next update.
Get in touch. Go on. Tweet at Radio ENRG. Email radioenrg@gmail.com.